Good afternoon. It is 6 minutes after 12, and this is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, January 14th, 2020, on your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Ahead this afternoon, our militant grammarian gives us a New Orleans-based course on language. The city is full of special terms in English, French, Creole, and a mixture of the three. We'll examine boo, address sandwich, and other forms of New Orleans language in our second half hour. After today's Ozark, stay with 91.3 for Here and Now from NPR and WBUR in Boston. On today's show, with the Iowa caucuses just 3 weeks away, six Democratic candidates will hold their final debate in Des Moines. We'll get a preview and more news on Here and Now beginning at 1 this afternoon. The Bella Vista Arts Council will recognize a novelist as the January 2020 Artist of the Month later today. The reception for Jim Danielson is this afternoon from 4:30 to 6:30 at the Bella Vista Bar and Grill on Clubhouse Drive. Danielson is the author of Sable Shore, a murder mystery set in Minnesota that also, fitting for an author living in Bella Vista, contains a bit of golf. Reception today free. And construction of more trails in Bella Vista means later this month there will be just one lane of traffic on Lancashire Boulevard between Nature Trail Lane and Canuck Lane. The alteration will remain until the completion of a tunnel for the city's trail system. Traffic flow will be controlled by signal lights and occasionally flaggers. This is Ozarks at Large. Arkansas Tech University Ozark offers a cardiac sonography program at its Chaffee Crossing location in Fort Smith. And today, students in that program are practicing echocardiograms on volunteers. Instructors are seeking more volunteers for students to practice on every Tuesday during the spring semester. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
Candace Case, clinical coordinator for the cardiac sonography program, describes an echocardiogram as an ultrasound of your heart.
We can evaluate the heart valves, the size of the heart, the function of the heart. I like to explain it to patients sometimes. It's the same machine that they use to scan babies when the moms are pregnant, except for we're using a different transducer and we're actually looking at the heart itself.
Learning this technique is just one part of the cardiac sonography program at ATU Ozark, which started in 2014.
They only do that on Tuesdays. We have class on Monday and Tuesdays, and then our students are actually in clinical all over the state of Arkansas for the rest of the week. So they spend most of their time in the clinical setting at the hospitals and the clinics. However, they have to learn hands-on instruction from us as well. So the best way to do that is to place them in our ultrasound lab and kind of stand over them as they're scanning and correct them and teach them that way.
Case says they accept volunteers from all walks of life, and while there's no age limit, they are looking for people with adult-sized hearts.
We do just instruct adult echocardiogram. So, someone with the size of an adult heart, 16, 18 and up. Pediatric cardiac sonography is kind of a whole different realm. You learn that after you get trained as an adult cardiac sonographer. So, height, weight, history of heart problems. Sometimes that's a little more better for the students to actually scan someone with an abnormality. And they see that real world, in the clinical setting as well.
They're technically not allowed to give a diagnosis, but Case says they can alert volunteers about some abnormalities they may detect.
If we do see something alarming, usually what we just tell the patient or the volunteer is, hey, we see, a small murmur or one of your valves might be leaking slightly. You might just want to mention it to your general practitioner, at your next visit. But we can't diagnose. You don't get any kind of official report. It's not read by a cardiologist. This is strictly just for teaching purposes only. But with that being said, Ms. Wendling and I have 17 years experience in scanning. So we try to, if we see something that kind of stands out to us, we will usually let the volunteer know to kind of mention that to their doctor. And then they can follow up with an official scan if needed.
Volunteers can sign up for slots from 9 a.m. to noon every Tuesday through April 28th.
And we usually place them in an hour and a half slot. So you technically, if possible, could be lying on the bed for up to about an hour and a half while they all take turns rotating. We set a timer and they all rotate through and try to look at your heart. Because everybody's heart's in a different place. Sometimes can be kind of tricky on how to find the image. So This is the purpose of that.
15 students are enrolled in the program this year. Applications are accepted each March, with the technical phase of study beginning in August. At the end of the two-year program, students can earn an Associate of Applied Science in Cardiovascular Technology.
Our program is accredited, and so what that means is they are allowed to sit for their registry or their boards before they graduate. So upon graduation, you know, they're able to apply for a job with a degree from an accredited program, and they have their credentials behind their name. So that's what our employers are looking for mostly. And a lot of them honestly get hired, you know, they rotate through as a student, and the facility likes them enough that they request them back to train them for job purposes. We have that happen every year. Last year, we had Mercy St. Louis come down and recruited four of our students to come work in St. Louis. They were in such a need.
According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, the median annual salary of diagnostic medical sonographers and cardiovascular technologists was just over $67,000 in 2018. Anyone interested in volunteering for an echocardiogram at ATU Ozarks Chaffee Crossing location can schedule an appointment by emailing ccase3@atu.edu. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson started off this week by defending his decision to allow refugee resettlement in the state. In September, the Trump administration gave state and local governments the authority to refuse refugees. Yesterday morning, the governor went before the Joint City, County, and Local Affairs Committee to respond to GOP lawmakers who have criticized his decision. The governor says he made up his mind based on the changes the Trump administration has made to the refugee resettlement program.
They have limited the number of refugees nationwide to 18,000, with likely fewer than 50 coming to Arkansas in 2020. Second, the priorities for refugee resettlement have changed from focus on balancing geographic regions to placing a priority on those suffering religious persecution and those who have cooperated with the United States in the war against terrorism.
The Trump administration has also required more stringent vetting and security checks, a process the governor says he's looked into. He says he's also been working closely with Canopy Northwest Arkansas, the sponsoring resettlement agency in Arkansas.
Based upon this due diligence, I have confidence in the high standard of security checks and that the incoming refugees will have the community support needed to get jobs, to pay taxes, and to be assimilated into our American culture and way of life.
All refugees who come to Arkansas will only be resettled in Washington County, Fayetteville, and Springdale after all three local governments express their support for the program. The governor told lawmakers in the past, most refugees to Arkansas have come from African nations embroiled in conflict or war. Some have come from Iraq and Afghanistan, where they were at risk for cooperating with the U.S. He then introduced a refugee who fled the Democratic Republic of Congo with her husband in 2000 and waited 18 years in Kenya before they were resettled in the United States.
But while they waited, they made a difference in the refugee camp. Lucia opened a small grocery store, and her husband, Kalula, planted a Baptist church. About 10 years into their time in Kenya, the Kenyan authorities reached out to them about fostering a pair of Congolese girls who had just arrived to the country unaccompanied. Their parents had been killed back in the DRC, the Congo, and they made their way to Kenya with a group of other refugees.
The family of four was eventually resettled in Northwest Arkansas in 2018. Governor Hutchinson says between finding jobs and paying taxes, refugees have been a net positive for the state and the nation.
In fact, there's a physical cost analysis through the Trump administration that President Trump requested that demonstrated nationwide that there's a net positive impact of $16.9 billion as a result of refugees paying taxes, employment, and their work.
Republican Senator Gary Stubblefield, who represents District 6, which includes Clarkville, Ozark, and Boonville, told the governor his constituents opposed the governor's decision. The senator also went on to say that not all immigrants assimilate to the American way of life.
I also see it in Northwest Arkansas. You have schools like in Springdale where they speak 46 different languages. You have schools that are stressed out in Northwest Arkansas. You have federal schools that I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, who have now made it a policy to not have anything that relates to Christmas.
In response, the governor said there's nothing unusual about refugees having a cultural identity associated with where they come from. And the governor argued that no one is trying to change the culture of Arkansas. Instead, he's chosen to extend that culture to those coming from terrible circumstances.
Each of you are leaders in your community. You've got a choice to make. You can create fear or you can help resolve fear. I challenge you to help resolve fear, have the facts, and to talk about those.
The governor says following a review of the refugee resettlement that takes place in 2020, he will advise the Department of State about whether Arkansas will continue to participate in the program in 2021. Yesterday's session about refugees is a topic for discussion for John Brummett, political writer for the Arkansas Democrat-Gazette, and Roby Brock with our partner Talk Business and Politics. John Brummett began the conversation with a bit of background regarding the refugee process.
And refugees are not illegal immigrants, not even legal immigrants. Refugees are not asylum seekers lined up at the border. These are people from war-torn countries or persecution, largely African or some Middle East countries, Afghanistan, who in Trump administration has severely tightened the screening with all security screening. And they're a lot fewer than there used to be. And a few years ago, there were a lot of Syrian refugees, and Ace Hutchinson, the governor, said, we're not assured of the security with these people, and we don't want to participate in receiving any. This is, the Trump administration said to states, of the refugees we clear, you can opt out. You don't have to take any. And they made it passive. If you don't do anything, then you don't have to take any. But if you send a letter by January 20 to Pompeo that you will accept them, that's okay. 44 states have done so. 15, 16, 17 Republican governors among them, maybe more. Only Texas, as far as I know, the Texas governor has said no. Ace Hutchinson, right before Christmas, sent a letter and released it. Yes, we are welcoming, and we trust the Trump administration screening. We will continue the status quo, essentially. Refugees can still come here, but only through an approved agency, Canopy Northwest Arkansas, and only for work within a 90 or 100-mile radius of that facility or that service. Trent Garner got upset. He's a very right-wing, Tom Cotton-ish state senator, young and aggressive. He said, "Well, you know, we don't know who these people are. Where did this come from?" I had questions. And he wanted a legislative inquest, and he got it this morning. And the governor came over, presented some African and Afghanistan refugees brought down by Canopy, told their compelling stories. Their families killed. They were jailed for a time. Presented each of them.
Did you sense that mollified some of the legislators that had angst about this?
No. Because the complaints, it turned out, were two. One from Trent Garner. Hey, those are touching stories, and nobody would kick these people out. But and you say this is only to this refugee service in Northwest Arkansas. But what happens if they decide to move around? Do other cities then have the right to decide, as Fayetteville and Springdale has, if they will accept them? The answer to that is no. In a free and open society, if they've cleared your super-duper tough president, Trump's clearance and security clearance, and they've landed here in the country and they've received services, they can then go elsewhere. It's called freedom. And as I put on Twitter this morning, there seems to be an odd fright here. I think you're safer with an African refugee next door, statistically, and really, than you are in the Arkansas Deer Woods, I think. And then Terry Rice said, hey, when this happened, all my people are calling, and I didn't know what to tell them. And he's saying, I understand these compelling stories, and we all support that, but I didn't know what to say. Why didn't you give us more of a heads up? Okay, maybe the governor should have, rather than just talk to legislative leadership and the ones in
Northwest. Heads up on the status quo?
That's what I put on Twitter. Did you see that?
I didn't see that.
That's remarkable. I said, "How
many?" That's the logic. So.
Yeah. I mean, Roby, just 10 minutes ago, I sat on the sidewalk waiting on you to get here and said, "How frequently is a governor supposed to brief legislators on the status quo?" Okay, that's what happened. There'll be no effect of this. The governor had to leave early and go to a ribbon cutting where I think you were.
Correct.
And I don't know what kind of potential demagoguery or fear-mongering or just legitimate, if misplaced, concern took place after that. But he made a good presentation, and he stood his ground, and had facts in his
It seems like there could be no policy change, though. I mean, it is going to be some federal law, number one, that's going to trump some of this stuff, and number two, if the status quo is there and they're not in session, there's really not
there's
much
nothing
of a,
they can do
change,
except. I'm sure they told their constituents that when the news went out, governor says refugees can come here, and everybody and these constituents are thinking that. That Iranian and Syrian terrorists are going to come here. They can say they did something, and they can express some misplaced fear-based concerns.
Maybe the headline should have said that refugees can still come here.
Roby Brock is with our partner, Talk Business and Politics. He talked with John Brum, political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. There is more from their conversation at talkbusiness.net. And there is more from Roby on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large. He'll talk with Arkansas Senator John Bozeman.
Well, I think that, you know, we have a situation where you have a group that has really wanted to impeach the president before he was even elected. Right now, you've got members in the House actually calling for impeachment. Once this is done, if it's not successful, to do it again.
Senator John Bozeman on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 on 91.3 and at ozarksatlarge.com.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Theater Squared welcomes The Royal, an award-winning play told in a boxing ring over six rounds. The Royal is inspired by the true story of Jack Johnson, who overcame all odds to become heavyweight champion of the world. Performances Tuesday through Sunday, January 22nd through February 16th, 777-7477 or theater2.org for tickets. Support provided by Pack Rat Outdoor Center in Fayetteville, serving Northwest Arkansas since 1973 with backcountry and urban footwear, clothing, and more. Dedicated to conservation and business waste reduction, packratoc.com or 521-6340 for more.
This is Ozarks at Large. A bit of environmental good news to report. A critically imperiled tiny fish known as the Arkansas darter is increasing at Wilson Springs in Fayetteville, a 121-acre wet prairie recently restored by Northwest Arkansas Land Trust. Clabber Creek flows through habitat encompassed by an I-49 interchange and plenty of commercial construction. The site is being surveyed by Dustin Lynch, an aquatic ecologist with the Arkansas Natural Heritage Commission.
It's a species that lives at these little tiny spring habitats, and so each population tends to be really isolated genetically. And in the state of Arkansas, it's extremely rare. It's only found at a handful of sites in northwest Arkansas around Fayetteville.
Lynch has documented a slight increase in the darter population despite new urban development around the spring site.
But it appears they're holding on stable. And I think the really good thing is just all the great work that Northwest Arkansas Land Trust has done up there in protecting that preserve. People have an idea about protecting these big rivers, and that's important too. But there's a lot of really rare stuff that lives in tiny little streams like that.
After taking ownership of Wilson Springs Preserve in 2011, Northwest Arkansas Land Trust staff and volunteers completed removal of invasive plants and trees on what is one of the last remaining tall grass prairie wetlands in Arkansas. Ozark wetlands mitigate flooding as well as provide critical habitat for native plants, trees, wildlife, and pollinators, some on this site identified as species of greatest conservation in Arkansas.
In restoring that back to kind of what it was originally, which was more of a sort of an open savanna habitat. That's what these fish like. That's not typical for a lot of darters, but that's a kind of habitat that's mostly gone from Arkansas. And you do see the loss of a lot of stuff, so it sort of is depressing over the long run, but it's great to see stuff like that being protected in a place like Fayetteville.
Wilson Springs Preserve officially opened to the public last September. It features interpretation, constructed trails, and bridges. Talk Business and Politics reports the United States Attorney for the Western District of Arkansas will resign at the end of the week to return to private practice. Dwayne Dak Keys has held the post for a little over 2 years. He is a former attorney for Walmart who oversaw global ethics and anti-corruption. His resignation is effective at midnight Friday night. During his tenure, he oversaw the prosecution of public corruption cases, including those involving former Arkansas State Senator Jonathan Woods. U.S. News & World Report's annual Best Online Programs report places the University of Arkansas's online graduate education programs as number 42 in the country. It is the second year the program has climbed in the rating. U.S. News surveyed nearly 300 programs for the 2020 report. Online bachelor's degree programs ranked 24th among public institutions and 29th overall. And artists in Arkansas are eligible for $4,000 fellowships from the Arkansas Arts Council. Up to 9 fellowships will be awarded to artists who have lived in the state at least a year and are 25 and older. The fellowships are awarded annually by the Arkansas Arts Council. Robin McClay, Artist Service Program Manager at the Arkansas Arts Council, says the fellowships are awarded by a panel that judges applications based on a rubric.
That judges the work based on creativity, on technical quality, as well as how well the artist articulates their intent with their artist statement.
Each year, the council awards fellowships to artists practicing in rotating media to better spread the fellowships to more artists. This year, screenwriting, theater directing, and painting, except for works on paper, are the three categories. Patrick Ralston, the executive director of the Arkansas Arts Council, says the fellowships are designed to recognize artists with a body of work that both shows talent and promise.
With the idea that it will encourage more creativity and further expansion of that artist portfolio. It's kind of a recognition that you are well on your way to a great lifetime achievement. And so that's really how we look at it.
Both McClay and Ralston are artists, mixed media and photography respectively. Both say they understand what a $4,000 fellowship can mean for an artist. McClay says it can be a big boost.
And the fellowships really matter because artists so often have to secure a second job or career to actually make a living. And hopefully this grant is going to help them spend more time in the studio and working on their craft.
Ultimately, Patrick Ralston says the Arkansas Arts Council sees the fellowships as investments for artists in Arkansas and arts in Arkansas.
Most of our grants are naturally targeted at organizations, but a big focus for me personally as an artist, and I know for Robin as an artist, is looking at how we can serve the individual and help the individual build their body of work and expand their knowledge base so that they can continue to their achievements in their field.
The deadline for applications for a fellowship in any of this year's three media, April 10th. More information can be found at arkansasarts.org. Robin McClay says if you don't find all the answers about the process there, you can even call her 501-324-9348.
Thaden School is now accepting applications for students entering grades 6 through 12 during the 2020-21 academic year. Located in downtown Bentonville, Thaden educates students from across Northwest Arkansas. Applications and information at thadenschool.org.
Community Creative Center winter classes begin January 26 with youth, adult, and family pottery, drawing, painting, glass fusing, fiber art, and Super Saturday workshops. Registration and scholarship information available at communitycreativecenter.org. This is Ozarks at Large. Louis Kahn is on that list of highest regarded 20th century architects. He was awarded both the American Institute of Architects Gold Medal and the Royal Gold Medal for Architecture. His work includes the Salk Institute in La Jolla, California, and the Kimball Art Museum in Fort Smith. Kahn's work, teachings, and legacy are subjects of a new book published by the University of Arkansas Press, Louis I. Kahn, The Nordic Latitudes, by Per Olaf Field and Emily Randall Field. In December, Per Olaf Field traveled from his home in Oslo to the University of Arkansas to discuss the book, and during that trip, he came to the Carver Center for Public Radio. Field was a student of Kahn's for a seminal year in Field's life, and he writes about that, among other things, in the book. But the author admits it took him some time to be ready to write about Kahn.
It's taken a very long time, and it's taken a long time for me to mature in the material, since there are so many books about Kahn already. But throughout the years, and I knew that there were things there I would like to express. And it takes a time, but I'm very happy about the final result, both Emily and me.
You mentioned in the introduction that you relied a lot on notes that you took over time, that you are a lifelong note taker.
Yes, I very much am. I've always take notes, particularly in relation to studies and when I listen to people. So the notes have always been with me. And I've been fortunate then to have some very important people to take notes from. So that certainly helps in that sense.
And you identified in this book that the notes are sometimes ideas or observations, mm-hmm. and maybe not necessarily direct quotes from mm-hmm. someone or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is a mixture, but the quotes, I'm fully aware of that I quote, and when I then continue the quote. That's so I'm aware of who owns what, to put it that way. But sometimes these things goes together in a way that you are not sure about in the beginning. And particularly the long time with this Pritzker Prize winner, Sverre Fehn, that I have many, many notebooks from. But the notebooks in that is also more that of a conversation, mm-hmm. which is a little bit different from the con notes. But I think the con notes that is in the book is important in the sense that they truly sort of talks about 1 year as a foreigner in his studio, the day-to-day notes.
The masterclass, that's the second section of the book. And the
that's
one
correct.
That I was really taken with, because I was trying to put myself in mm. your shoes or your peers' shoes at that time. And this was 1972-73.
That's correct. The last class he had full time, he died then in right. the semester after.
That must have been, and you say this, it was mm-hmm. an amazing experience from almost the first moment.
It was for me an incredible experience that have followed me the rest of my life. Now that's 46 years ago and it's still alive in a way. And the book talks about that. There was some spark that was made there that I could follow then with Sverre Fehn, but has made a strong impact on me, not as an admiration per se on Kahn, but rather my own creative process and the understanding of architecture on a deeper level. So I could always go back to the notes and I feel it's all refreshing to read Kahn. It's inspiring. And so that has followed me throughout these 46 years, yes.
And it wasn't just Kahn, but as I mentioned, he would have guests.
Right.
And some of the most amazing minds mm-hmm. in architecture.
Yes.
And I loved your description of their interchanges. Mm. Brilliant people.
Yes.
with often very immense experience and firm opinions, mm-hmm. and just hearing them kind of dance around those sometimes.
Yeah, they were really hitting one another. the big ones were really hitting one another in a way that they never gave in. And Kahn, in some way, was able sort of to intervene with this in a very beautiful way, I must say, though he never gave in mm-hmm. either and sort of was had to be sure that he sort of got his last words, to put it that way. But he had such a brilliant mind, so whether he did not like it or very much liked it, it was what was said or crawled about. He was still open in a way, which also we felt good about. The only time I really felt that he was sort of angry in a way was this time with Venturi that I talk about in the book, when he talked about the duck house.
Yes, yes. And it's worth getting the book just yeah. for that conversation that eventually weaves into a Kentucky Fried Chicken store, right?
That's correct. And then he used, but Venturi, why do you say such things like that? You're not such a bad architect. At the same time, Venturi was the first assistant that Kahn hired. Mm-hmm. So it's a very interesting duality in that part.
The first conversation I think that you and Ms. Kahn had, just the two of you, was about your origins, right? Or your shared, somewhat shared history.
I very much felt that he was sort of, since I was from the north and is the only student that has been from the north in Khan's studio, I very much felt that he was somewhat attracted by it. He wanted to feel me out in a way, particularly in relation to the language. And I'm very aware that he knew certain words that he picked up, particularly when there was a Swedish-American student there, and when we talked, he was very alert. Hmm. At the same time, he asked me this question that was sort of has worked as a base for the research of the book when he asked me directly, "Do you know Arne Korsmo?" Arne Korsmo is this famous Norwegian architect that is internationally placed, and I did not know him at that time, as my whole education is from the States. But that moment in which I did not know has followed me ever since, really. Yeah.
You mentioned both in the book and during our conversation that you felt you needed to mature into the book.
Mm-hmm.
How did you know that was happening?
Well, I was very fortunate to have a grant and stayed 1 year in the collection, and which was a beautiful thing. And then I was a fairly young guy. This was in 86. Mm-hmm. And I thought I had it all laid out. I was right about daylight and Khan on light. And then I went into the archive and understood that there was a certain one was the phrases that is so often used, but behind that was a story and a material that I did not know at the time. So the Fulbright year in the collection was very important in that sense. And yes, I had several attempts on the book, but I would say I was not mature enough to write it before now. but I'm glad it came now.
I would say there has to be a somewhat emerging sense of maturity to realize you're not mature enough yet.
Yes, you're right. I think you have to sort of face yourself in the way that are you really up to discussing this material? Or do you want to just simulate what others have said before? What is your offer in a way? And that had to be clarified in a better way. But when that was done, it was also, I knew I had the material. The question was also how it could come together.
And then there's also the sense of responsibility.
That's correct. Very much so. And it was fantastic in the Khan collection that we had a little gig about the book a month ago, to come back to the collection and sort of facing him, "Here, Mr. Khan, here you have my book. I hope you like it." So that was a big experience and a moment for both Emily and me. That was a rather beautiful moment because you felt that you have done the best, your best, and you gave this back anyway.
Are there any similarities between putting a project like this together and creating a structure?
No, I would not say so. In some way, it's sort of an easy sentence to say, but architecture to build comes, in principle, very easy for me.
Mm.
But I have a fantastic time with making a book in the way that you have no excuses. It's just you and your mind that works together. And sort of it's a thermometer how sharp you are at all time and what the precision you actually have in relation to what you're talking about. It's very few instruments. It's you, the brain, and a pencil on or a machine, right? In that way, I feel at times architecture has more tools. I'm not saying that it's easy at all,
right.
rather the opposite. But to be alone in your own world with the words, I think it's a rather beautiful thing. Mm. that I feel very strongly about. I feel strongly about it in the way that certain times in your life you have heard certain sentences, certain words, and when in certain moments in that sort of you discover something, aha, that you discover something that you have not seen or realized before. And I think the poet and the world that the poet use have that capacity.
Well, congratulations on the book. I think people familiar with or not that familiar with his work will benefit greatly from picking this up.
Well, thank you very much.
Per Olafield is co-author, along with his wife, Emily Randallfield, of the book Lewis I. Kahn, The Nordic Latitudes, published by the University of Arkansas Press. He spoke with us in December during a visit to the University of Arkansas. He is a professor emeritus at the Oslo School of Architecture and Design, and he and Emily have a studio practice in Oslo as well. This is Ozarks at Large with me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, Catherine Sherrills, who just happens to be our Milton Grammarian. Welcome back.
Thanks, Kyle.
Yep.
It won't be long until Mardi Gras.
Oh, yeah.
Mardi Gras 2020 falls on Tuesday, February 25th. To help our listeners who may be planning a trip to NOLA, or New Orleans, Louisiana, here are some language tips from the travel site neworleans.com.
Okay.
They talk different in the Big Easy. There's a long list of only in New Orleans words and phrases, not to mention crazy pronunciation.
Now, I don't want to get ahead of you, but are we going to talk any about street pronunciations?
No, we discussed a few of those one time, but yeah, I would...
Calliope instead of Calliope.
Well, that's one of them, yeah, Calliope.
Burgundy instead of Burgundy.
You took my next sentence.
Oh, sorry.
That's all right.
Okay, I'm going to shut up. Okay.
No, that's fine.
Okay.
But just in case my complaints... pasted over what you said.
Right.
They say the street name Burgundy,
right,
which is Burgundy to us, right? You look at it, you think Burgundy. And for Calliope, which we think of as the merry-go-round,
right?
They say Calliope, right?
Calliope.
Calliope. That's right, Calliope. Yeah. And if you say that, you'll pass for a local.
Right. I think those are that way so they can tell if you've just moved to town. Or
right.
Not. You're not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, Kyle, let's see how much Nolan speak you know.
Now, you know, I lived there for about 3 or 4 months right after college.
No.
3 or 4 months of unemployment.
Well, you know.
If you're ever going to be unemployed, it's not a bad place to be unemployed.
Except that I have a big varmint problem, and the biggest varmints live in New Orleans.
You know, but that's a city, right? I mean, varmints live in New York City.
I
they
never
live in
lived
Houston.
In a city, yeah. Okay. Well, I did Dallas for two months, but okay.
All right.
NOLA words.
Okay.
Back of town.
That is, I want to say that's like a region or a neighborhood that's around the Moonwalk or around sort of down, you know where Canal is? And Canal drops off to the ferry.
Yeah.
And then you go, I think it's called the Moonwalk that's opened up down there.
This doesn't mention that, but it could be that.
And
Let
it
me
goes
just
over
say
towards the Superdome?
What they say, yes.
Okay.
There you
okay.
go. This is a section of New Orleans that developed around the former New Basin Canal.
Okay, okay. I don't think I was thinking that, but...
Roughly near the present-day Mercedes-Benz Superdome.
Right.
We all have to have those names, right?
Mm-hmm.
The area was in back of the natural levees along this, which the city first developed. So that's why it's back of town.
Right, right.
Boo.
Oh, that's your loved one.
Yeah. Term of endearment for...
your significant other.
Yeah. It could be also a parent or grandparent.
Right. And
or
that
child.
Has taken on a life beyond
New Orleans. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
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 Beaucoup.
Plenty, right?
Yeah. Lots of. Yeah. Originated in Haitian Creole and French, where it's correctly spelled B-E-A-U-C-O-U-P.
Okay. Beaucoup. Yeah. Beaucoup.
Yeah. By my house.
At my house? Come visit? Okay.
At my house.
Okay. All right.
This is just like the French expression, chez moi. And I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but my house.
Right.
Cher or cha?
I know that in Zydeco they use it, and I think, again, it's like boo, like a loved one?
A term of endearment.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
It seems to me that it's only women, though. I don't think I've ever heard of a man called
Cher. Yeah, I think you're probably right.
Dressed when ordering food.
all the fixings.
Yeah, and especially on what kind of sandwich?
A po' boy.
Yeah, right. Okay, faubourg.
Beats me. I don't know.
The French word for suburb.
Oh.
This refers to areas now in the city that would have been outside the original city limits, such as Faubourg Marigny or Faubourg Tremé.
Ah.
Tremé, you know.
Tremé, the HBO show.
I know that
show,
from
yeah.
HBO, yeah.
Right.
It's the only reason I know it. Faye Dodo.
Oh, that's a fun party.
Yeah,
that's a good time.
Dance party, Cajun dance party.
Yeah.
Good food and lots of music. Flying horses.
A carousel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I love that term.
Yeah. And it says specifically the antique carousel in City Park's Carousel Gardens. I'm not familiar with that. The one I think of is in the Monteleone.
And the one, and there's also one, or at least there used to be at the zoo in Audubon Park.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh, uh-huh. Gri-Gri.
Isn't Gri-Gri a good luck charm?
Yeah, voodoo good luck charm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And how do we spell crew?
Like the crude, K-R-E-W-E.
Right, right. And what is that?
That's a social collective that participates in Mardi Gras parades and parties.
Right. A carnival organization, as in the Crew of Rex or Crew of Zulu, and variation of the word C-R-E-W. Members privately put on balls and parades that make up Mardi Gras. Lanyap.
A little something extra.
I love that.
Word.
I do too.
When I was 10 years ago, almost 10 years ago, when we had made the decision to go to a daily Ozarks at Large, I desperately wanted there to be something at the end of the show that meant, well, one more thing, or also, but it had to be Ozark. You didn't want to use Lanyap for Ozarks at Large. Obviously, in 10 years, I haven't come up with...
Wow.
The closest we came is someone suggested, like, burnt ends from barbecue, but that doesn't quite work.
That doesn't.
No. So, if anyone has an idea...
Yeah.
Because I still have this idea that I like
in.
To do.
He
yes.
wants it.
All right.
We want an Ozark term for lanyard.
Or, yeah, something that would traditionally go at the end of something in the Ozarks.
Yeah. Here it says this could be a free dessert at the restaurant or a treat on your pillow at the hotel. Of course, this is a travel thing, but lanyard's used for lots of things.
Well, in the Times-Picayune, back when it was... a physical paper, maybe they still make it physically a couple days a week, but the arts section
was called Lanyap.
Yeah, so you'd look in, and I guess down there they call it Lanyap, but you'd look in it for who was playing music, what restaurants were opening, that sort of thing. Yeah. I like that idea.
Yeah. Make dodo.
Is that make dodo? I think it has nothing to do with the kitchen, right?
No.
Is it go to bed?
Yeah.
Okay.
Go to sleep.
But not in a sexual way.
No, go to sleep.
Right, okay.
Mm-hmm. Comes from the French faire dodo, which is
from faire
dormir.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Making groceries.
I also love this one. When you go, you know, if you're going to go to the A&P, you make groceries.
Uh-huh.
You don't go buy groceries. Yeah. And that is something that is, as far as I know, only in New Orleans.
I've never heard it. Mm-hmm.
When the Pope visited years ago, and I don't remember which Pope, but it was a big deal because New Orleans is a big Catholic city.
Yeah.
There was a comic or a coloring book out, and one of the, you know, the Pope going to the cathedrals and the Pope going to the zoo, and one was the Pope making groceries, going to A&P.
Yeah, I'd never heard that.
I love a city that is so distinct.
Yeah, that you have a list of expressions that other people won't know.
Baltimore is another one. I just love that.
Making groceries, old-timers in New Orleans make groceries at the store. This is another one that has French origins as a rough translation from faire son marché, which means to do one's grocery shopping. Since faire means both to do and to make, making groceries came from a slight error in translation from French to English.
Yeah.
And I do apologize for all those French speakers out there. My French is awful. I'm pretty good with Spanish, but... Okay, neutral ground.
That is the median that's in the middle of the street. And the streetcars sometimes, their tracks are in neutral ground.
And the term is said to have originally referred to the wide median on Canal Street, which separated the residents of the French and Creole part of town from the newly settled American sector.
That I did not know. Mm-hmm. That's a sensible origin story,
Most people, I think, know this parish.
That's what they call their counties.
Right. Louisiana has parishes instead because it was originally ruled by the Roman Catholic nations of France and Spain. From the French, Parous, I think.
And, you know, a parish in South Louisiana makes all the sense in the world, but you get up to North Louisiana, where it's as different from New Orleans as any other place.
It's Texas and Arkansas,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, and it's weird to be, mm-hmm, like in North Louisiana, they have a parish. It should be county. Somewhere north of Baton Rouge, they should become counties.
Shotgun houses.
That's the kind of house. So the front door goes all the way. I mean, there's a hallway, basically, that goes all the way from the front door to the back door. It's a straight shot.
And why was it named that?
I guess because you could shoot a shotgun through there.
Right. Okay. And not hit anything. It's one of New Orleans' most distinctive architectural symbols. Long, narrow houses, you can see, with rooms all lined up in a row.
Yeah.
The design is thought to be an evolution of the African longhouse style brought to Louisiana via Haiti. The name is thought to come from the West African word shogun, or God's house.
Huh. And aren't they supposed to be easier to cool?
I would think so, yeah, because the breezes would go straight through.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where you at?
How you doing?
That's right.
And going back to a conversation we had recently, you'd say good. Not well. You'd say good.
But you wouldn't tell them where you are.
Right.
Who dat?
Who dat's going to beat them Saints?
That's right. An official cheer of the New Orleans Saints fans everywhere, shortened from who dat say they going to beat them Saints.
Yeah.
Same fans are also called who dats.
Yep.
Your mom and him.
How are your folks doing? How are your people?
You know all of these.
How are your people doing? I love that one, too.
Yeah, me too.
I like it also because it puts the mom as the central force, mm-hmm, of the family. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm not even going to give you the French or Creole on this. I'm going to ask you just to tell. For people planning a trip to the Big Easy in February, what would you wish them?
Oh, my gosh. How does that go? Laissez boom.
Laissez les bon temps rouler.
Yeah, laissez boom. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
See, I thought you could say it better
than me. Well,
no. I knew how to say it really well early. Laissez les bon temps rouler.
Very good.
I think. But it was French for let the good times roll.
Our Milton grammarian is Catherine Schultz.
It's the Community Spotlight on KUAF. I'm Pete Hartman. Today in the Nancy Blair Operations Studio, we're joined with Susan Hopkins. She's with a nonprofit group out of Eureka Springs, out of Carroll County, known as People Helping People. Susan, nice to meet you.
Good morning.
First time we've had y'all in here, and I'm so glad we could get you.
Happy to be here.
Now, what you guys do is help to purchase needed prescriptions for area folks.
People Helping People has been in Carroll County for 29 years now, a longstanding program. We're a nonprofit 501c3, and I remember the day we started because I'm one of the founding members.
Okay.
When all of the pharmacists in Carroll County met with a core group of us that were wanting to start this program. And every pharmacist said, yes, we will help participate. And at that time, that was a big deal because every one of them has to spend a lot of time with us when we call them and say we want to help somebody get a medicine.
I bet you there are some hoops and hurdles in a nonprofit, in a service that helps people buy prescriptions, because we know that sometimes prescription drugs can be abused and things like that. I'm guessing that they really want to know where these are going, right?
Yes, they do. Yes. And the people have to contact the social worker at Mercy Hospital, 870-423-3355.
Okay.
And she is the one that reviews your application. And sometimes it can just be on the phone. We've tried to prevent barriers to getting the medicine. So sometimes we've even had people call us from the pharmacy on their cell phone and say, hey, I can't pay for my medicine.
In some cases, the price for medicine can be astronomical, and that all takes funding. So I'm sure y'all really rely on the community to help you guys out.
Yes, we do. We have fundraisers. We apply for grants. Our mothership is the Office of Human Concern in Rogers.
Okay.
We want to make sure we always credit them. And we're always grateful to Mercy Hospital because they donate the time of their social workers. So that has also helped us tremendously.
A new place for y'all to be seen in Eureka. Talk about this.
Yes. We have a new booth. We're called Flamingo House. And we're in the Hobbies and Home homestead. It's like an antique mall slash flea market, and we have a little booth in there, and everything that we sell goes to buying medicine, and you can just find unique treasures, vintage clothes, all sorts of fun things in our booth. We do have a website. It's peoplehelping.org, okay. And then we also have a Facebook page, which is People Helping People. And then you can always call that number at Mercy Hospital again, 870-423-3355, and ask for People Helping People.
Awesome. Susan Hopkins with People Helping People. Thanks so much. Nice meeting you.
Okay, thank you.
You can email me. That's pete@kuaf.com, where local matters.
This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Paris. 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF, produced at the Carver Center for Public Radio. Contributors to this edition included Antoinette Grajeda, Jacqueline Froelich, who gave us information and sound for an update on the Arkansas Darter, and Susanna Sitek, who provided information and sound about Governor Asa Hutchinson's discussion of refugees. Timothy Dennis mastered our show in the Herald and Blanchcock News Studio. Our conversations between John Brummett from the Arkansas Democrat Gazette and Roby Brock with our partner Talk Business and Politics, recorded at KATV Studios in Little Rock. Our militant grammarian is Catherine Schultz. Community Spotlight produced by Pete Hartman. Our theme written and performed by Daryl Sean. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda finds music from our archives to help us end many of our shows. Today we'll listen to Terra Nova Kings playing A Kind Gesture. The band will be at JJ's Fayetteville on Steamboat Drive Friday night. You can find out more at the Facebook page for Terra Nova Kings. Thanks for listening. I'm Kyle Kellums. Back with you tomorrow at noon and 7.
What I did, if we met up again, I wear the hat of a master, jingles Mad Hatter with jewels. I was trained if she found out.